the Good Samaritan. And the whole goal being that you can see that story from a number of different views. Same outcome, though. You begin to think about the characters in the story, though. There are folks in the story that would have been impacted in different ways. Let's talk about the lawyer first, the teacher of the law. If you don't know the story, it's found in Luke chapter 10. And it's a story that really kind of Jesus in the middle of teaching, and it says that the lawyer stood up kind of in the middle of Jesus' teaching. My guess is he was probably teaching something that was a little uncomfortable. And so Jesus-like fashion, he says, well, let's just ratchet up the discomfort a little bit. Because he says, teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus puts it back on the lawyer, the teacher of the law. He would know the law, and he said, okay, that's fine. It's to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, nice job, gold sticker. But the lawyer wanted more. It's the legalistic that have a tendency that need more. They want to know more and give me some more so I can be bound and I can be secure by the boxes that I can check. And so he said, but who's my neighbor? Now, culturally, he would have thought that Jesus could have just said that the people that were his neighbor were just the Jewish folks, the Israelites, those that descended from that. So that would be it. Those were the guys. Let's just live right there. But Jesus, in his fashion, begins to tell a story of the Good Samaritan. He tells a story. He says that there was a man who was on the side of the road, and a priest walks by. The guy had been robbed, and he's laid there for dead. The priest walks by, sees the man, goes to the other side of the road, walks past him. Then a Levite comes along, another essentially pastor, preacher, minister, whatever you want to call him. He goes on the other side, sees him, and goes on the other side of the road as well. Now, I want to just think for a minute that the lawyer is hearing this. That you can think about church leaders, you can think about those who aren't doing the job that Jesus is asking them to do, but then there's this other element of the people that are actually listening to the story. That it's not just the lawyer that's about to get schooled here. There are other people there. Think about how they would respond. Think about how they would walk away with the message. Think about how they would be affected by that. Think about what they'd begin to think about the teachers of the law. So then they go through, and a Samaritan, the person that no one wanted to get help from, the person that's in the margins of society, those that really wouldn't even have been counted. He said, well, then a Samaritan. And it would be as if, you know, the tires on the road squealed to a stop. Wait, what? Who? The Samaria, what? I mean, people would be shocked. Even those that are listening to the question being answered by Jesus, I'm sure there were those that were shocked by that as well. Just as we sit in an audience and we hear something in a message, and then we're kind of like, well, I didn't think of that myself. And Jesus is saying, you got to relate to this. Because he begins to tell a story. Not only did the Good Samaritan do what he could to take care of him, he put him on his donkey. He took him to the closest Holiday Inn. He goes, hey, I'm going to pay for everything now. I'm going to pay for what I can now. And if there's more, I'll come back by and take care of the bill. And Jesus says to the lawyer, now, which one was the neighbor to the man who was robbed? Who was the neighborly guy? And the teacher of the law, being so like bent out of shape, being so shocked, being so, maybe indignant, he says, the Samaritan. Nope. He doesn't have the guts to say the Samaritan. He says, the one who showed him mercy. Story ends. He didn't have the guts to even say, well, it was that guy. The guy that I wouldn't like, the guy that I wouldn't want to help. You know the one person that we didn't talk about in this? The robber. The guy that got robbed, not the robber, but the guy that got robbed. You think he cared who helped him? Nope. Not at all. There was no worry about that. There was no thought about what would have happened. Now, if you think about it, like even culturally now, even in this, segregated, culture that we have now, when we see people who are on one side to the other, we say that we're all about everybody, that everyone, we've got diversity. The term diversity is now turned. Right? It's not about the mosaic that Jesus puts together, that we're all different, that we forget that we're Genesis 1:26, all created in the image of God. And so it's not a race issue or a diversity issue. We, as men and women, as mankind, have made that the issue. Because Jesus said, well, wait a minute, all have been created in the image of God. And so it's a man-made issue. And it goes back. I mean, you can look at these issues that have gone through history, and one of those is just the way that we treat people in the margin. In this story, a Samaritan was the hero to the shock of everybody, the one that no one wanted to help. But what happens is, at the time, there was a tremendous amount of prejudice between Jews and Samaritans. And not only did that kind of give them this leg up on them, there became an us versus them mentality. Not those guys. And that continued to move on. Now, we live in a time where we put people in the margin. Those are the people. We don't want to deal with that. Now, I wouldn't want that guy to help me out. Or was Jesus really talking about that guy? Yes. The answer is yes. You picture the person that you right now have this maybe angst in your heart. The person that brings up the most anxiety. Who would that be? And Jesus says, that's the one. So if you're asking the question, who's my neighbor? The one that comes to mind for you, that's the one. And then at the end of the story, Jesus doesn't let it go. He turns the term neighbor into a verb. He says, now I want you to go neighbor all these other people. I want you to go love the same way, share kindness the same way. Neighbor's not about proximity, because people want to know, is it the guy down the street? Is it the guy two blocks over? Who am I supposed to be a neighbor to? He said, no, we're about neighboring. Be a neighbor. Show kindness to anyone and everyone. Now, kindness takes a different form. Kindness can take a different form. It doesn't mean that we can't say what's in Scripture. We have to say what's in the Bible. We have to be able to proclaim Jesus is the one that we live for. That's what separates us from other religions, that we have a risen Savior in Jesus Christ. But we got to be able to say that. I think oftentimes we cower back. Now we've begun talking about the idea of what it means to be in the margin in life, to those people who are treated differently. As you remember the story, if you were here last week, we talked about why the series even came about. And it came about because Lavelle, our worship minister's gone, he brought up a story about what happened to him when he got pulled over. Now that's the easy story to jump to. For a minority, when we hear that, it's like, well, there's this cop story. I want to just say right now, we believe in the police officers. We think that police officers are good people. There are bad police officers out there. Just as we believe that the ministers does a good job, but there are also a lot of ministers that do really bad jobs. And so don't make it about Black Lives Matter and then say, well, all lives matter. Understand, seek to understand. Stephen Covey, the guy that came up with the Franklin Covey planner. Does anyone remember that back in the day? Some of us that still like to write things out, that we know that pretty well. But Stephen Covey, a guru in organizational leadership, to understand how to move along people from one stage to the next organizationally, he said, the problem is we never seek to really understand first. Our job should be, as believers, to seek to understand that person first. And then seek to be understood. Instead, I listened to you, now it's my turn. No, seek to understand. Sometimes conversations need a rest. You've given me a lot to think about, and I need to walk away for a while. Perspective is everything. Last week I said, if you're gonna be able to see someone else's other view, you've gotta be able to stand on one side, and if you're looking at it one way, and you see it one way, you've gotta be able to get yourself up, pick yourself up, and move, and see it from another perspective. Take a look at this video. There's a couple of clips here I wanna show you. All right, I think their music might be going. So there's a beginning of this clip, right? What you see is a man who starts to take off. If you see there's a woman right there, you could be in your mind going, I think he's running after that woman. And then all of a sudden the car rolls up behind and you see that there are two guys staring at the guy. Now play the second one. All right, so you had the idea of maybe, man, this guy is running away from somebody. you know, trying to get away from them. And now it's about the, you know, I use the old music from Ocean's 11. So like to go, now we're going to pull a caper. We're going to go steal from this guy, rob from this guy. That's what you would see if you just saw that right now. Now, I say this because we live in a clip-generated world where I can make anything look like anything I want. Now play the whole thing. This is my hero music, by the way. I see, if we were to just play the clips and the clip only, like one by one, and just, you know, broadcast that. So this man tried to rob a guy. That's all you would see. You can make it fit. The goal is to be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. We have to be those that are willing to step up and go, you know what? I want to understand, which means sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's painful to hear the other side of the story. Get the other side of the equation. So I wanted to be able to bring up Jordan Payne, our new student minister, because one, he is better looking than me, but he looks a little different, lived a little different life than I have. And so I want to share some of his perspective. Give it up for Jordan Payne.
I don't know if y'all caught that, but he said I look better than him. I want to make sure.
It's recorded.
I didn't want to gloss over
you
that.
Don't have to like cheer it that much. Jeez, oh, peace. I don't get it. So now, Jordan might be a little out there because you just spent, you know, a night with, or 2 days with junior high kids, right? A couple thousand at Northern Kentucky, so.
We just had CIY yesterday and the day before. I'm running on, well, I got 8 hours last night, but the night before that I got 2 hours. Believe it or not, less than 24 hours ago, middle schoolers were sprinting through this sanctuary all over the place.
Yeah, so. So have fun with that.
Actually,
right?
Sprinting and screaming in the same. It was awesome.
And so thank you for giving up some time. You also had a birthday?
Yes, my birthday. I can't even remember.
I think
whenever
it was
the 21st,
right?
Was, that was my birthday.
It's Friday, so happy birthday to you from
thank
all of
you,
us.
Thank
so,
you,
we always clap when people get to be a year older.
Yeah.
Nice job. You got a year older. So just so some folks don't know you very well, I wanted to, if you miss storytelling night, you kind of miss something just a little bit odd for a grown man to do, in my eyes. I might be completely wrong.
Why don't you
share what it is that you do that seems to be a little juvenile for an adult? Go ahead.
I am what's called a professional Pokemon Go player. I have...
Say again, because...
It's Pokemon Go. They're little... I have a tattoo of a Pokeball right here, if you want to see it later. I travel around the world...
Dude, wait a minute. Those pants are so tight, there's no way you're rolling that up. I'm just telling you right now, that's not happening, but...
That joke was not planned.
Go ahead.
I have been to Japan for Pokemon Go. I have driven to Canada for Pokemon Go, and I snuck some in London on my honeymoon.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me play Pokemon Go.
Yeah, as you say, honey, I'm going out for a run, so yeah. I'm going to go play Pokemon. So if you are a Pokemon enthusiast, maybe you can connect with Jordan, and so... play a little bit. So, Jordan, we talked this week, and you know, our goal was to have just the view from your seat and some of the perspectives that you've experienced, things that you experienced. We talked specifically about, you know, the Good Samaritan, right? In this day and age, who would you see as being the Good Samaritan?
Right now, culturally, I would definitely say it would be a minority of some kind, probably a person of color like myself. Or another thing that came to mind when I was praying about this message this is a transgender individual, someone who you would look at and say, oh, this is probably a man, but they have on what you would call women's clothing. Someone like that is who I would see as a Samaritan.
So the people who, like, you have no desire to have help you, those that might make you feel the most uncomfortable, they're coming up here now.
Yeah, someone that would make you feel uncomfortable.
Like Bethany? Making us
Bethany.
Uncomfortable now? Give it up for Bethany, folks. Save the day.
Bethany, did you turn it on? You did. Thank you.
All right. And so we spent some time, we saw as a staff on Martin Luther King Day, we saw Just Mercy together.
Yes.
And it brought up a ton of emotions on both sides. You obviously saw that and it affected you differently. But one of the things that you mentioned was a book called White Fragility.
Yes, great book.
Yeah, and so something you recommended that we all read. But one of the quotes that she has from the book specifically talks about, it says, I was co-leading a workshop with an African-American man. A white participant said to him, I don't see race. I don't see you as black. My co-trainer's response was, then how will you see racism? Explain that from your perspective when someone says, well, I don't see you as black. I see you as being just one of me. I'm one of you kind of thing.
Well, I feel like it kind of devalues me as a person because a lot of my life experience has been surrounding me being black. If I walk into a room full of white people, what's going on in my mind has a lot to do with me being black. And if you don't see that, you're not going to be prepared for my personality in a situation. I know me and my wife have a thing where I go places sometimes with a lot of white people there, and she wonders why I'm not as talkative and outgoing as I usually would be. It's because I don't want to draw attention to myself. That's the reality. I don't want to make anyone in the room uncomfortable, and I don't want to draw the person that's going to say something inappropriate to me, and then I have to mentally prepare myself to not overreact, because then I turn into like an angry black person. And so if you don't see color, you have no chance of thinking, wow, all that is going on in this guy's mind just walking through the door.
Right. And then, you know, we talked about specifically, this is not like an uncommon thing for you to be the only minority in the room and, you know, predominantly in the room. But, you know, Emily happens to be white, right? And so you're at her family's house or whatever situation you could be in. Why don't you want to step up and say something? Right? I mean, if somebody says an off-color joke, or what stops you from doing that?
As a lot of you know, you don't want to be that person that ruins the fun. Unfortunately, there's just not a lot of white people out there when another person says something inappropriate racially. There's just not that many white people are going to say, hey, don't say that. That's inappropriate. They might do an awkward laugh or not laugh, but 9 times out of 10, no one says anything, so it's up to me. Am I going to say something? Well, now if I say something, I've made everyone uncomfortable. I don't know how to take a joke. It goes on and on. And so you, like, learn over years to train yourself to just kind of deal with it. And it's easier to not welcome it at all by being quiet than it is to deal with those type of things over and over again.
Yeah. Now, we talked specifically about being pulled over, right? When you see the lights in the back of the rearview mirror, what does that make you, how does that make you feel?
It was interesting when Tim asked me this question in his office. The first thing I said is, even you asking me this question gives me a little bit of stress. I joked earlier with the first service about driving on 71. I'm sure all of you know driving on 71, where the police like to hang out near Kings Island. I know to drive a certain speed there. But if I ever do see a cop pull out and their lights come on, in my mind, there's like 30 things. The first thing is, am I wearing dark colors? The next thing is, I hope my phone is charged because I have my phone set up where I can click the power button twice. And my Geico insurance card comes up, so I don't have to look for my insurance in the glove compartment.
Does anybody else do that, where you click twice and that's what the first thing comes up? Right. I just wanted to, so soak that in for a minute, because that's something that I don't think we want to gloss over. Like that you do that intentionally.
Yeah, I do. I want to limit the amount of things that I have to reach for. That's the logic behind that. And also, I want, as soon as I know I would be getting pulled over, I'm already pulling my wallet out. Because I don't want to have to pull it out when they get to, I know they're going to ask for my license, so I don't want to do it when they're standing there, because I don't know which cop this is and how he feels. And I told Tim earlier, it really depends on where I am. If I'm within the city limits where a lot of these police interact with black people on a regular basis, I'm not that nervous. But if I'm in a rural area, like say I'm driving to Columbus, and anywhere between here and Columbus I get pulled over, I'm horrified. I'm completely terrified if I'm getting pulled over, and I'm not exaggerating at all.
Now, so you worked in Owensville.
Yeah, Ohio. I did work in Owensville at a day treatment center for a while.
Yeah, so far east Claremont County.
Yeah, Claremont County.
Drive right in, I think it's
32,
and then you get there, and then all of a sudden, one of the first things you see on someone's...
Big Confederate flag, whole side of the house.
Right.
So that was it's an interesting reminder on your way to work. I was already the only black person on staff there, but every morning having to see that, it's kind of, I did get emotional earlier. It's sad because I'm already taking a step outside of my comfort zone to go and work there. And to see that over and over again, and I wonder how many white people have seen it over and over again, and they're like, oh, whatever, it's just a flag. Mm-hmm. But how many me's are there that see that, and they're like, oh, I'm not coming back to Owensville.
Yeah. Well, and how fast did you drive in Owensville?
Let's say the speed limit's 60, I try to drive 59. And the reason I try to drive 59 is you don't want to drive too slow under the speed limit, because that's suspicious. but you also don't want to speed because, you know, once you're two or three over the speed limit, you can get pulled over. So it's kind of stressful, so I typically use cruise control, like right at the speed limit or maybe 1 mile per hour slower.
Now, this is a safe place. How many of you have ever been pulled over in the room? Raise your hands. Raise them proud and high, people. Like, right on. So now, of all of those folks who have been pulled over, like, yeah, man, right. I was telling you, like, in the last service too, like, I never felt any anxiety until I got to up to about 11 points on my license, and the next ticket was losing my license. So,
and that's his fault, by the way.
That's my fault, right? But I mean, how many of us actually consider all of those steps when we're driving, you know, when you're driving in a car? So again, that's another thing to kind of think about because the perspective changes. Now, why not just keep your wallet on the dashboard?
Yeah, so me and Emily listened to this country star. He's a black guy. His name's Coffey Anderson. If you're looking for a new artist, he's really good. And he released this brilliant video a long time ago where he was telling all the people of color that liked his music, hey, I've got a great idea so you don't get shot by the police. When you get in your car, you just put your wallet on top of your dashboard. That way, you don't have to pull it out. And I told Emily after we watched this video, you've known me for years, and I can barely keep track of a hat. I'm not going to put my wallet on the dashboard. And that was an interesting day for me because I said, I'll get shot by a cop before I take my wallet out of my pants every time I get in the car and put it on the dashboard. So that was kind of a hard moment for me to have to say, that's too much. I'm just going to lose it.
Yeah. And you've had experiences, though, too, outside of just even church or even working, you know, with dealing with police officers. You were one of the only minorities at CCU, or a very few number. And I remember y'all telling some stories at Lavelle's wedding and talking about how it was completely different. Like, you kind of looked for each other, saw each other, like, oh, hey, all right, good, we're good.
Yeah.
What was that experience like at a predominantly white university?
Similar to what I was talking about earlier, where you hear the jokes in the comments and you kind of just have to make a decision early on. Am I going to say something or am I going to let it slide? I told the earlier service the simplest thing. The best example to give you is the one I get a lot is you're not black, or you don't talk black, you don't act black.
Now, and what is black?
Well, black is like, I don't know, y'all know black stereotypes. We got to be mature in here and act like, you know what they are. It's like ghetto, thug, drug dealer, you know, rap music, you know, that type of deal.
And so when you're at CCU and you have somebody make a comment like an off-color comment, or when someone makes a comment about diversity, you know, or, you know, person of color, you said being in a room where everyone's head kind of turns towards you.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I'm going to give Tim an example of what this looks like. So I want everyone to just pretend like you're not paying attention to the sermon and look like you're texting
that's
on your
weekly,
phone right
my friend.
Now.
I think that's weekly.
That's weekly.
I'm just kidding.
Just look down like you're not paying attention. And when I count to three, I want you all to look right at Tim, okay? One, two, three. So,
no?
I would be in class and the word slavery, black, some joke would come up and that's what I see. Everyone's just...
Yeah.
So what are you going to say?
Yeah. Whether you have something that you want to say or not.
I might not even be in the mood to talk. There's 30 people in the room. Yeah. I happen to be the only black one. That don't mean I'm in the mood to tell you about it.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because everyone does.
Right. Now you feel like you have to.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure
to,
hey, tell us about that.
Yeah.
Whether you want to or not.
You grew up in Price Hill a little bit. You were in Aiken over here, over in College Hill for a while.
Yep.
And then you moved to Xenia, Ohio.
Yep, moved
what
to
was that? What was that like?
It was very different than Cincinnati. I'll tell you that right now. A lot of opportunities to get in trouble, a lot of drugs and crime and things like that. And one thing that I learned was stay in the house. So my entire senior year of high school, I tried my best to just stay in the house. And the logic behind that was I wasn't doing anything I wasn't supposed to, but if someone else who looks like me does something that they're not supposed to, it might as well have been me. And so that was my senior year of high school. I just didn't want to get in trouble, even though I wasn't doing things to get in trouble.
Right. But you loved to, I know you mentioned love playing basketball when you were a kid. And so while everyone else is out playing basketball, you're...
Yeah, a lot of people are hanging out, having fun. And I was kind of scared too, because I just didn't want... I had friends that were getting arrested and harassed by police. And it was just not... I promise I was not doing anything I wasn't supposed to, but I was scared that I would look like someone who was, or I would be in the vicinity. And one thing I said earlier is people of color tend to live in more compact areas that are kind of urban, and a lot of people in a lot big area or small area. And unfortunately, the crime rates are higher in those areas, but what I tell people is there's more people. Mm-hmm. That's often lost. If you have a square with 1,000 people and you have another square with 10 people, there's likely going to be more crime in the square here, regardless of the fact that they're black. And so that's something that's frustrating because it doesn't matter that I'm black. There's just more people here. And yeah. So that's just something that's lost.
Yeah. And then we talk specifically about discipleship, right? So we say that we want to love and lead people one step closer to Christ, and that means in every facet of their life. And so when you're in a situation where somebody says, you do happen to call somebody out, where you think there's trust, right? And then you do call out, and then there's an emotional response.
Yeah. This is what happens. Let's say they make the comment of like, oh, I feel safe around you. You don't really act black. And I say, well, what does a black person look like? Right there. That's where they fall apart. Every time. Every single time. 9 times out of 10, they cry. And so now, me being the person that was originally offended and my feelings hurt, because you just said that, first of all, people that look like me are a stereotype and I am a special one. You just said that. And I am wanting you to apologize. But now, my obligation is to make you feel better. That's like a white magic trick. It is. It's like this started with you saying something super offensive that apparently you didn't mean, which that doesn't make sense. You said it. Of course you meant it. That's what's going on in my head, by the way.
Yeah. And so even that, you know, so now there's that you thought you had a trust level with somebody that you could come back and say something, but now they're stunted. They don't ever want to get better because the emotional side jumps in.
Yeah, exactly. And the way I word it is we're not going to get anything done like that. If you start crying and I have to make you feel better, I'm going to resolve this situation by telling you, it's okay, you know, it's fine, I know you didn't mean it, but now I will never say it again, and that person's lost. They're not going to get any better with this specific race issue. And I'll tell you another thing that I realized after last service. There's going to be some of you in this service that feel the need to come and tell me, oh, yeah, I grew up with a lot of black people, I have so many black friends. Don't come up here and tell me that.
No, you don't want to know that.
The reason you want to tell me that is that book that I told you. It tells you. It's White Fragility and White Guilt. Instead of using that energy to make yourself feel better and prove to yourself that you're not racist, go home and resolve whatever issues you have left with race. Because if you didn't have those issues still, you wouldn't have to walk up here and tell me about your black friends or where you grew up. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to say. But that's something I realized after last service is you shouldn't have to tell me that you have black friends. Yeah. If you know in your heart that you're not harboring these bad ideas that may have came from when you were 7 or 20 years old, it doesn't matter. You shouldn't have to tell me that.
Well, and even in good, with well-intentioned, thing. And I think that's we talk about there being these overt, overt racism where it's just right there and everyone sees it. And then there's this kind of like in the background, like you don't really know why you feel the way that you do. And so I'm making those comments. And again, these are all good for things for us to hear. You know, I mentioned I talked to a buddy of mine that I coach with, and I asked him, I said, do you prefer African-American or black? And he goes, I prefer Julian. You know, and I was like, that put it in a perspective for me. Like, I don't say, Jordan, our black youth minister, right? Yeah. I mean, that's not who we are, and that's not who we want to be. But I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of address something that I actually, I hadn't even given much thought, and I'm glad you said it to me. But I was talking about how just proud I am of you and glad that you're here and know that you're going to do amazing things. And honestly, you've done incredible things so far, and I mean, I can't wait to see what the future holds for you. But I did mention that you were the first, you're kind of the first full-time minority on staff, or you mentioned it to me, and then you said something that kind of snapped me back a little bit, and I was like, it's good to know, because you said there's pressure when you're the first, so explain that a little bit.
There is a lot of pressure. If any of you guys watch sports, ESPN has this habit. They'll be like, this is the first black quarterback to throw a touchdown on a Tuesday of 30 yards, Like, there's all these things where every day there's just like, this is the first black person and blah, 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 blah. And I get it. It's cool. But at the same time, when you say you're the first, there's so much pressure. And I talked about this. I don't listen to rap music in my office. I love rap music. It's one of my favorite kinds of music. But the reason I don't listen to it is because I don't want someone to walk past my office and be like, oh, there it is. I knew it. You guys laugh. It's real. Yeah. I don't want to just be, oh, he's just another one of the, and honestly, that's not fair.
Yeah.
That's a big part of who I am.
Right.
I also like Pokemon Go. That's not a black stereotype. I'm a whole person. I'm God's original masterpiece, just like all you guys are. And
yeah. Amen.
And so that's when you say you're the first black this, it makes you think, oh, I better not mess up.
Yeah.
Or I better not do this thing. Or I better not recommend we go get fried chicken. You know, like. And
so
that's real.
Well, and even on that side too, I mean, we're still earning trust, right? And so you're keeping an open mind, and you know, and that's the thing. I don't want you to feel the pressure from us like you're not gonna mess up, because you've messed up already. We just haven't told you, you know. But Dan messed up 3 times last week, so I didn't say anything to Dan either. So
Dan's gonna mess up at that chili contest.
Hey, it's over.
I was waiting on that the whole time.
Yeah. I want to put it out there just so everyone knows, and I know he's really proud of it, but you can dunk a basketball.
I can dunk a basketball. Sam Yoakum, thanks for throwing a great pass wherever you are.
Yeah, and you're how tall?
I'm 5'8".
Now, I want to tell you, this week was a little earth-shattering to me because I thought I was 5'8".
He thought he was 5'10".
No. My driver's license said 5'10". I didn't, you know... I'm not sure how the mistake got there.
He had to wink at somebody or something.
So, yeah. But there are just some incredible things that are in the future for us here as a church. But also, we're really blessed and honored to have you on the team with, quite frankly, a bunch of guys that are going to mess up, right? We all mess up, and we're all, you know, excited about not necessarily the messing up, but learning and growing and knowing that God's going to continue to use us. And so what we want to do now is we'd like to invite everyone to stand. And what I'd like to do is everyone to join hands with somebody. If you're on the wings, on the right, left, please close it in, essentially. And so we want to... So this week, it hit me, and I will tell you, what a blessing it was, because there are times where we want to say hard things, and unfortunately, not everybody wants to hear hard things. Not everybody wants to ingest it and take part in it. And I think that's the part where we're all going to have to continue to learn. Revelation 7:9, if we're to say, where do we land? We want to be a church. We say, you know, we want God's will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. And when John writes, he's looking in at Ephesus, a church that's just killing it. They're doing unbelievable things for the diversity. We know that the dividing wall of separation came down. We know that there was no particular man or woman or Greek or Jew, and they all of us together. That takes work, and that takes courage for, like, Jordan to share his heart. It took courage for Lavelle to share with us some thoughts during our teaching team retreat. And so it takes courage to do this, but it's also extremely encouraging to know this week alone how many people have been praying for our church, how many people have been praying for your hearts, praying for mine, and so I'm just grateful as a pastor here at LifeSpring to be a part of folks that really care, and that we are going to see his kingdom come and his will be done on earth as it is in heaven, and we're going to look more like Revelation 7 and make that happen. So will you just pray with me as we begin to close here? Father, I thank you for your love and your grace and your mercy, and I thank you for the way that you have made us, that we are your workmanship, that we are your masterpiece, God, that we've all been created in your image, Lord, and we need to keep our eyes open, our hearts open. We need to keep our ears open to hearing those things that will allow us to become better people, that we will continue to grow up towards you in our life and our worship, and in that you might change those things that are inside us, as Jordan said, for us to go home and begin to think about why those things make us feel uncomfortable. Lord, that we might grow with people, that people that look different than us, people that act different than us, people that have different life experiences, that we will grow together so that we can reach out, God, and be the church that the world is crying out for. That we want to see your kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. Lord, give us a power and a strength that comes only from you. Give us the wisdom to know how to respond. Give us the ability to adapt and move where we need to. God, I thank you for this church. I thank you for this congregation. May you bless each and every one as we continue to just fight for those that are in the margin, to look out for those who need a voice, God, and that we share in our experiences so that we can be better for you. God, I'm so grateful for Jordan in his heart, and I pray that you bless him and everything he puts his hand to. In Jesus' name, amen.